If you want another way to think of these, of you know what I'm doing here, it's sort of non-commutative with the dash right there, non-commutative multivariable weighted shifts. And yeah, so let me begin with the unweighted case. Okay, so Steve's essentially talked about the major aspects here, right? So the in the unweighted case, you have the free semigroup on n non-commuting letters with right, the unital free semigroup. Then you have unrestricted Fock space, and so it's kind of an orthonormal basis indexed by words in the letters of the free semigroup. And then you have the creation operators, which act on the Fock space in this manner, sort of generalized shifts, non-commutative multivariable shifts, and in fact that's how you want to think of the LIs as the non-commutative multivariable version of unilateral shift. So they are isometries, and they're isometries with pairwise orthogonal ranges, and it's easy to see that their ranges, the span of their ranges is going to be the orthogonal complement of the span of the vacuum vector. So the algebra then that I'll be talking about today, the algebra is for the unweighted case, and are the unital weakly closed algebra generated by the LI. So these are now the non-commutative analytic Toeplitz called the non-commutative analytic Toeplitz algebras appearing in the literature. And so I'm going to be talking about sort of generalizations of these, right? And okay, so to begin with, what are these weighted shifts? Okay, so the definition, right? So you could have unitary equivalences, but let's just assume that they actually act on Fock space in the nice manner. So you're going to have an n-tuple t1 to tn, and scalars lambda I w, and so the operators are going to act as weighted shifts. Ti of cw is some multiple, some weight times ci w. Okay, so it's easy to see then from the definition that each of the ti's is going to decompose in this way. Okay, it's a product of li of the ith creation operator, li with a diagonal weight operator. Okay, and so here's the picture for n equal to 2. Okay, so your Fock space, remember the unrestricted Fock space is indexed by this orthonormal basis corresponding to words in the free semigroup, and you'll have two weighted shifts. So T1 will map the vacuum vector down to the basis vector C1, and similarly all the way down, and so the way I like to think of it is that in the weighted case, your edges are weighted by these certain weights, all right, particular weights, one for every word and, well, yeah, one for every edge. So right, so that's the basic definition. Now before I get to the particular operator algebras I'm going to talk about, let me give you kind of an interesting subclass, and that is the periodic ones, what seems to be a natural notion of periodicity for these shifts. Okay, so you can use these periodic shifts to get non-commutative Bunce-Dedens algebras, so where the inductive limit algebras are matrix algebras of a certain size with entries in the Kunz-Toeplitz, and when you factor the compacts, the Kunz algebras with of a certain size. Okay, right. Okay, so there's the definition. So there it is mathematically, right? So the point is, right? So what is for a periodic n period k n tuple? What is the ith operator do to a basis vector CW? It maps it to a multiple lambda IU CIW. Now the point is the U. Okay, the U is the unique word which comes out of the natural factorization of W. Okay, it's the remainder word, right? Because the letters don't commute, there's a unique way you can write, decompose this word W as a product of a word V, which is has its length is divisible by K, right? Together with some word which is of length strictly less than K. There's a unique way you can do that. Okay, and so you use that scalar. Anyway, that's the definition. But think of the picture. Okay, because I think the picture is the important point. So remember, you can think of the weighted of these weighted shifts, these n tuples, as weighted Fox space trees. Okay, so in the periodic case, how do you get the weights? Well, so in the period 2 case, n equal to 2, so we have two operators, and period 2 means you go down to the second level, okay, second level, and you have, in this case, you have six scalars, okay, so A, B, C, D, E, F can be anything, and after that, the entire Fox space tree, all the weights are determined, and I've tried to give an indication of how it works, right? So you take this treetop, this sort of remainder treetop, all right, and you juxtapose it down here, 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 and you continue on like that. You get the entire Fox space, and each of the edges is going to be a weight corresponding to a weight up there. Okay, and well, first of all, notice that this has the nice pictorial. You can see from this that if you look at what happens when n equals 1, it collapses to an infinite stock, and you really get standard periodicity for weighted shifts, right? So for instance, when n is equal to 1 here, you're just talking about, so two weights, A and C, say, A, C, A, C, A, C, all the way down. So you recover standard you get periodicity for a weighted shift in the for n equals 1. And so, as I mentioned, you can use that notion to get non-commutative Bunce-Dedens algebras, but I'm not going to talk about that today, since this is a non-self-adjoint workshop. I'll talk about the non-self-adjoint algebras generated by these shifts. So the rest of the talk will be thoroughgoingly non-self-adjoint. So. So we look at the unit of weakly closed algebras generated by these TIs. Okay, so what are these operator algebras? Well, you know, so what's the anchor here now? The anchor is really sort of two settings. First of all, the unweighted non-commutative case, okay, so n greater than or equal to 2, the unweighted case, right, you get the non-commutative analytic topology algebras, which are really the prototypical free semigroup algebras, and a number of authors there. And the other motivational case is when n is equal to 1, there's, of course, a lot of work appearing in the literature on sort of weighted H-infinity algebras, if you like to think of it. So there, I mean, this is mainly work from 30 years ago, but lots of authors, and I'm sure I'm missing some, but, you know, Shields' survey article is sort of where I start with this, right? And so the goal here then is to generalize results, if possible, from these two settings, and hopefully expose new, you know, non-commutative phenomena. Okay, and just more generally, I mean, with these weighted shifts, you can do that. In principle, you can ask any nice result on single variable weighted shifts. I mean, you can ask, you know, can it be generalized to this setting, and if so, do you get anything new? Or, I mean, if not, do you get anything different or new? So that's kind of the general goal of this mini program, I guess. Right. Okay, so, I'll spend the rest of the talk giving you hopefully an indication of some of the, just a little indication of some of the results and tools that are... that I'm using and results that I get, right? So, first of all, in the multivariable case, you can't get around. You have to use weight functions, and for instance, Kurto Muhle did some work on. Kurto has done a lot of work, I guess, but in particular, Kurto and Muhle have a nice paper on multivariable commuting n-tuples of multivariable weighted shifts which pairwise commute, and they use the weight function. So we have to do the same thing here to really simplify the presentation. And so what you do is you have right. So your weight function. Well, there's the definition, but here's the way to think of it. Okay. So again, in terms of the tree, so WUV. Okay. So two words, U and V. That's going to be, that value is going to be the product of the weights. Okay, the product of the weights from the vertex corresponding to V in the Fox space tree. Okay, so you have the vertex corresponding to V. Follow from that vertex. Follow the unique path, which takes you down to the vertex corresponding to UV. Okay, and there's going to be unique paths, right? Because it's non-commutative. Everything is non-commutative here. So you've got this path down to UV, from V to UV. Look at all the weights you pick up, all the edges you pass, right? Look at all the weights you pick up. This number is the product of those weights, okay? And with, right, and well, here's an operator theoretic expression of what I just said. Immediately you see the co-cycle condition. I mean, it comes straight out of the tree perspective, right? Okay. So anyway, there's these weight functions around, and whenever you want to prove anything, you have to deal with them. Okay. Use them. Right, okay, so some results. First of all, the commutant. Okay, so, so the two motivational cases. So for n equals 1, a weighted shift, all the operators, the collection of operators which commute with a weighted shift, a given weighted shift, are exactly the weak closure of all the polynomials in the shift, okay? And so it is its own commutant. In the unweighted case, the non-commutative unweighted case, the commutant is equal to the corresponding algebra generated by the right creation operators, all right? The right creation operators. So the natural question asked then is the commutant of these L lambdas here, the algebra generated by the shifts, equal to the algebra, weakly closed algebra generated by some weighted right creation operators, right? So that's a natural question to ask. And what becomes immediate when you just play with the equations is that if these are weighted right creation operators, then they're gonna pairwise commute these two families exactly when the weights for the weighted right creation operators are equal to this quantity. Okay, so this is our weight function W. Okay, so it gives you a tight relationship between the scalars for these things to commute. I mean, there's a tight relationship between these scalars and the lambda IWs, and it's right. So these quantities are determined by the lambda IWs, the weights for the weighted shift. Okay, in any event, right. Okay, so let's go to the next slide. This is a little bit curious, sort of different than the single variable case, because I mean, what is that? What is that quantity? What is this quantity? And well, let's focus on this quantity. In the single variable case, it's just it's basically just the weight. Okay, so it's the if W is a word of length n, okay, so in the single variable case, just think of it as n, okay. So this is this quantity, this is the product of weights from I to WI. Here you're just the products of weights down to W, okay. In the single variable case, that's you're just looking at the quotient, so you're just looking at that last weight, the sort of the nth weight, okay. But in the non-commutative case, you're looking at paths that are in different parts of the tree, okay. So this condition is trivially satisfied for n equals 1, because it's just saying just asking that the weights be bounded above, all right? So they're bounded operators, so the weights are bounded above. But for the non-commutative case, this is now non-trivial, all right, asking this. And in fact, not all of these weighted shifts satisfy this condition, but there is a large subclass which does, right? So anyway, the point is, suppose that a weighted shift satisfies this. Its weight function satisfies this, okay? It's kind of a murky condition, but you can visualize it. There's a way to visualize it in terms of the tree. Then if you define if you define these weighted creation right creation operators, right, by multiplying by those scalars, then in fact you do get the generalized commutant theorem. Okay, that does go through. Okay, so as I mentioned, one is always trivially satisfied for n equal 1, but not so for n greater than or equal to 2. But there are sort of there's a large enough subclass where it is satisfied, right? And so as for the unweighted non-commutative case, so the Davidson-Pitts results, for instance, these results come automatically when this is true. So in other words, when one holds, okay, so you get some free information on the algebra, of course, as you might expect from the commutant theorem. Okay, right. So let me turn to reflexivity, and try to give you a taste of what's happening here. So right. So you can think of so Steve sort of talked about this a little bit for the. For the LGs, for the LG stars. So similarly for these, these algebras are generated by T1 to TN together with the identity. So you can think of subsets of CN as containing the eigenvalue information for the adjoint algebra, essentially because of these equations, right? Maybe that's not phrased properly, but anyway, every eigenvector for the adjoint algebra is going to be essentially characterized by such equations, and so you form a subset of n-dimensional Euclidean space in that way. And so you can talk about geometry then, right? And so here's a theorem for reflexivity. If you do satisfy one, in other words, and so in particular you have the commutant identification, then if the subset of CN formed by the eigenvalues contains an open set, then the algebra is reflexive. Okay, and so a couple things. This generalizes the result for n equal to 1, which is so I think it was proved by a few people. But the result for n equals 1 is that if the spectrum of a weighted shift contains something non-zero, then the corresponding algebra is reflexive. But the basic point is, if it contains something non-zero, it doesn't just contain something non-zero. It contains an entire disk, okay, an entire disk about the origin. And that's so in that sense, this is a generalization of it. Well, it is a direct generalization. So I also mentioned that this is gives a new elementary proof of reflexivity for the unweighted case. Davidson-Pitts and Arias-Popescu proved it for. Cribb's power as well got a different elementary proof of reflexivity for LN, different than this one. So it is. So the proof here. The point is, the proof here goes through in the commutative case. Okay, so that's when I say elementary. It's what I'm referring to. Okay. It's an open question for n equals 1 still. I'll talk a bit about that. But basically, no, I don't have a good answer. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll mention something in a moment. Yeah, so I'll just quickly give you, a class of examples which are reflexive. There's a theorem you can characterize in terms of essentially calculus, multivariable calculus. You can characterize where the eigenvalues for L lambda star lie. And what I want to point out is that if the weights are bounded away from zero and they satisfy one, then the algebra is going to be reflexive. And the point is that it's the hereditary nature of the eigenvalue set guarantees that you're going to have an open set. And hence, by the theorem, it's reflexive. So, for instance, the two periodic shifts, they don't always satisfy one, even the two periodic shifts. But if one is satisfied with an upper bound of C over A, if you just say A is equal to B and C, D, E, and F are all the same, just to keep it simple, then one is satisfied with this with this upper bound, and the weights are clearly bounded away from zero, so the algebra you get here is reflexive. Right, and so finally then, I don't have a complete answer to this the question of reflexivity, and I'm a little embarrassed to say I don't even have an example of a non-reflexive algebra. And how do you get them for n equals 1? Well, you get them by looking at the unicellular weighted shifts. They're always non-reflexive. The algebras are non-reflexive. And so I guess I thought a little bit about this. This is kind of a natural question, then, I think, to ask, is there, and so this would be, you know, presumably you get some non-reflexive algebras here if you could answer this question. But so the question is there an analog of those shifts, unicellular weighted shifts in the non-commutative multivariable setting? And I thought it would be just a very simple question at first. There's an obvious thing to try, but the obvious thing doesn't work. So I'd be interested to talk to anyone about this, or if anyone could provide an answer, that'd be even better. But I'll stop there. Weights going to zero, but what should the lattice be? And so the lattice, the natural choice for the analog here would be the lattice would be the sort of direct sums of the subspaces determined by everything lying below a tree, a vertex, right? But these weighted shifts, every one of these weighted shifts has invariant subspaces which do not belong to that, to direct sums of those. So it's something more subtle. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. I mean, this is, independent of weights. I mean, you always get these. Right, yeah. So I think, so I have some ideas. I mean, I'm thinking, the way you get them for n equals 1 is the weights going to 0. And so there's, that's definitely a starting point. You might need some cross relationships with the weights as you go down the tree. You might need zero down every path, and somehow when you get further away horizontally, they get their quotients go to zero or go to infinity or something like that. Yeah. So I don't really know.